Cool Initiatives is seeking to support, develop and invest in ideas or edtech businesses that will help schools and teachers to operate more efficiently and effectively. As you're listening to the EdTech podcast, you may well have a great idea or know someone else who has an idea that you think would help schools and teachers to do this, and we'd be delighted to talk to you. We're very happy to discuss administrative tools as well as learning technologies, or you may have a non-digital product or other service that you think would be useful. Cool Initiatives already works with over 12,000 schools every day, with 20 years' experience of building and sustaining a profitable business. We want to be able to use that experience to support others at the very start of their journey and build something great together. So you may have already started a business and want to take it to the next stage, or just have an idea and don't really know how to turn it into a business. You may not know your CAC from your LTV, your IP from your MVP, or your burn rate from your churn rate. But don't worry, buzzword bingo is not our game. We're here to help turn a great idea into a great business. To find out more about our investment approach, take a look at our website, coolinitiatives.com. And please, just get in touch. We would love to hear more about your ideas and how they could support education.
Hi guys, this is Ben from Rocket Fund. Rocket Fund is a crowdfunding platform for tech in schools, created by Nesta. We set up Rocket Fund as we noticed two urgent problems. There's a growing digital skills gap in the UK, while school IT budgets are in decline. We want to fix this and enable all students to access the latest tech. So far, we've helped schools fundraise £185,000 for tech products they otherwise couldn't afford. From VR headsets and 3D printers to robots and writing software. The average amount raised is £1,300 and the record amount raised is £8,000. So, if you're a teacher in a UK school and there's something you'd like to try, then go to www.rocket.fund and click Get Started. We'll support you through the whole process. What's more, we're currently doing a back to school campaign. So the first 50 projects launched before the 5th of October 2018 will receive a £100 rocket boost to kickstart your school year. But there's more. If you're an EdTech supplier, then Rocket Fund can help you too. Make it easier for teachers to fundraise for your product by creating a template project on our platform. Just go to www.rocket.fund and click on the List Your Products link at the bottom of the page, then we'll do the rest. So far, we've helped over 38,000 students to access the latest tech. So give it a go. If you're a teacher, supercharge your school's IT budget and transform the experience of your students. Or if you're a supplier, then get on board. Any questions, email us on hello@rocket.fund. Over and out.
Welcome to the EdTech podcast, the show about improving the dialogue between ed and tech. This week's episode features my conversation with Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders. We talk about what the top priorities are for education leaders, in which situations technology can be a useful leadership tool, and why podcasts are flipping brilliant. This interview was recorded at the Global Education and Skills Forum. But first up, here's part two of our mini-series feature on digital transformation with Kenny Nicol from Canvas. I kick off by asking him about moving on from his VP role to take on the title of General Manager for EMEA and all that entails.
Yeah, it's really exciting and really interesting as well. So it's so I've been in that now just about 2 or 3 weeks. I'm still in the very first kind of 100 days of the new role, and it's all part of and a new global strategy for Instructure to become even more of a global company with a real pass down of autonomy to the region. So our APAC offices, our EMEA offices, our Latin American offices as well, primarily to allow us to be a lot quicker, a lot more responsive to our regions. Because if you think about it, a school, let's say a school in Sweden, completely different to a higher education institution in the Netherlands, which is completely different in many ways to an apprenticeship provider in the UK, which is again very different to maybe one of the Ivy League in the US. So there's been a big recognition by our company that we need to give autonomy and a lot more autonomy to our local regions. Super excited. Yeah, and I'm thrilled about it.
And plenty of our listeners will know about the sort of learning management side of Canvas, but I was also reading about your work in training and video, and given the sort of theme of this mini-series is around digital transformation, I just wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about some of those services as well.
Yeah, sure. So Structure is a company, you think about it, so this is our 10th anniversary this year, so it's a big birthday year for us, for the company. And Canvas itself, which is our platform for teaching and learning, which is very much focused on the education community, schools, colleges, again, apprenticeship providers, etc. But we also developed recently is Bridge, which is our employee engagement suite of services. Now, the reason for that is because we primarily, as a company now, we see our role is very much helping individuals, not just to learn, but actually to develop from, say, their first day of school right through to their last day of work. And that includes Canvas and also Bridge. And as part of those suites, we have a number of individual modules, one being ARC, which is our video platform, which you've mentioned, and for training providers specifically, as well as universities, etc. It's a fantastic tool that allows an institution to turn video from a kind of passive learning style to an engaging learning style. And what I mean by that normally is, if you're a student, you sit there, you watch a video, you consume it, you take your notes. Whereas ARC actually allows you to participate in real time in the video with your colleagues, so asking questions about it, answering questions then and there as part of a quiz about the video as well. All of our focus to really drive up engagement, because that's the important thing about it. You can have adoption, but are the students actually going to engage as well?
I mean, that's interesting in the context of MOOCs, because recent analysis of MOOCs, given their the programs are happening with greater frequency, is that level of engagement and whether that's sometimes dropping off.
Yeah, and providing the tools and analytics to the teachers and the academics as well, Sophie, is really important. So as part of that, so if the engagement does drop off of the viewers, so to speak, you know, whether they're students or, you know, they're CEOs who are on an executive education course, when does that drop off occur, and why? Is it simply because actually the person who's recorded the video just needs to do a better job of it? Is the material, God forbid, boring, or is there something else which is meaning that the student is just dropping off engagement, whether it's 30 seconds into a 5-minute video, 45 seconds in, or are we still having videos which are 20, 25, 30 minutes, where absolutely, as we know, in terms of attention span for learners today, it's not quite 25, 30 minutes attention.
In terms of, you know, why we should be optimistic about technology and the potential it brings, you know, what do you see as the reasoning behind that? And where should we be slightly more cautious and where should we be slightly more bullish?
I think I'm a true believer of education technology specifically. Absolutely can have a material impact in enabling improved learner outcomes. Now, they're not the solution. I very much see them as the enabler, because I don't see a day when, you know, teachers and lecturers are no longer there, i.e. they're truly replaced by AI and machines, etc. I think increasingly when you look at the generations that are coming through university, college, even indeed schools, they're far more engaged and used to technology. So that concept of digital transformation for them, and if I think about my two young children, yeah, that's just the digital norm. This is what they're growing up with. I do think, though, that the strategy, whenever we're talking about digital transformation, very much should be teaching and learning led. It should never be a case of, well, we just put new technology in, we've caught up, so that is the answer. When I was talking to Professor Ian Martin, who I know was on your podcast the last time, he's a very good mentor of mine within the sector, and he'd said to me a number of things, but one of the things that really resonates is that your investment within digital technology should be at least equivalent to that of your investment in building infrastructure. That's how important it is. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily financial, Sophie, like, you know, £20 million new building.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, your people, your strategy, even just the time that you're stopping to think about what your digital strategy is.
What are the kind of books that also help spark ideas and keep you kind of motivated in this area as well?
Oh, there's a few. Where do I start? There is a great blog. If anyone's interested in education technology, especially online learning globally, there's a great blog that I follow. It's called Illiterate, and that's their authors are Michael Feldstein and Phil Hill. And they're great at giving a really impartial view of the ed tech kind of market. And another great one, although I'm a little bit biased with this, is our own community website, community.canvasLMS. And in particular, there's one section within it which is called Canvas Studio, which has all of our future developments from a product perspective and some really exciting and innovative things that we're thinking about and we're trialing just now. So that's always a great reference point if anyone wants to think about how we're thinking about how our own technology needs to develop. Harvard Business Review is always a great reference point. Funnily enough, actually this morning, I have a regular little daily kind of email. It's called the Tim McShane Daily. And Tim's a past colleague, and he does this little daily email that captures the current things that are happening in the world in ed tech and other things. That's quite great. Another thing, just now I'm in the middle of reading a great book, which is really thought provoking. Just now about the future of learning, and the author's Alex Beard, and the book is called Natural Born Learners. I would encourage anyone who wants to kind of learn about a different view as to the way not technology necessarily is going in the future, but actually learning.
Just to sign off, what's next for you in the sort of next 6 months?
Oh, there's a few, Sophie. So I mentioned I'm just at the start of the kind of first 100 days of this new role. So the immediate thing right now is our preparing for our European conference, CandiceCon, which is in the Barbican in London on October the 9th. And that's for all the Canvas curious people who are interested just in education technology. So there's a lot of work going on to make that the best that it's ever been. Other things for the company, very much in terms of the product development, we have some really interesting and exciting developments coming out from an analytical perspective with Canvas, enhancing that side of things. And in Bridge, we have a new module which is focused on career development. So that's a really exciting thing that's coming out in the next kind of 2 to 3 months. Again, I think about Instructure Europe. One of the things I'm passionate about, and you know, a lot of my colleagues would say I'm very pedantic about it, is looking at how we can just make our business as Instructure even easier to do business with. Looking at how we work with our clients, how we're adding additional value rather than just it's just software and it's just technology. And we do a fantastic job at it, but I'm always looking at how can we do better. So that's one of the key elements of my own plan over the next 3 months, to look at from a European perspective, you know, how are we doing and how do we do better?
Thanks, Kenny. A huge thank you also to Rocket Fund, Canvas and Cool Initiatives for supporting this episode.
I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you're in London on the 22nd of September, make sure you come on down to the EdTech Podcast Festival, where we have got rafts of live podcasts, plus educator and EdTech workshops, and over 170 people already registered to get involved. All the links are on our website, and thanks for listening. Good. So, just come out of the first GESF live session, which was very interesting, with a couple of YouTubers and Rory Bremner moderating that session, so very unusual. And I was delighted in the queue to see Jeff Barton from Askell. So welcome, Jeff.
Hello.
So as I understand it, you just flew out this morning to the Global Education Skills Forum here in Dubai. How was that?
Yes, I mean, we sit here, don't we? I've just had a text message from my PA saying the snow has started falling in Leicester, and here we are in baking heat in a kind of version of Disneyland, having listened to Rory Bremner talking to inspiring people, talking about education. I mean, it is so surreal, but so fascinating, and great to be here.
And what are you excited about in terms of your schedule over the next couple of days? And, you know, what's your kind of main remit whilst you're here?
Well, I find myself surprised to be here, and I was invited to be here, and it was all paid for to be here. So in that sense, unless I get that in, so members don't think we're using their subscriptions. And the reason I'm excited to be here is I think that when we listen to what we talk about in the UK education system, particularly the English bit of the education system, we talk about inspection, we talk about monitoring, we talk about performance targets, we use this kind of management consultancy language, which doesn't resonate. And here what you talk about is what are young people going to need as skills and qualities and knowledge for the future? And it's the big picture. And I just think that we have to remind ourselves that we are shaping the future for these young people. And this gives us a chance to see what they're doing in the rest of the world, I think.
Absolutely. And to go back a step as well. So if people are listening in and they aren't that familiar with Askell or your own role, could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're doing there as well?
Yeah, so I was an English teacher for 32 years, and I actually still am, because I still correct people's apostrophes relentlessly, etc.
Like my dad.
And I'm now General Secretary of Askell, having been a head teacher for 15 years. Now, Askell is a trade union for school and college leaders. We've got 19,000 of them. They're in independent schools, they're in state schools, they're in every variety of schools in all parts of the UK. So you've got this whole range of different people who are connected by leadership and connected by having responsibility for the next generation of young people. So on our watch, we need to make sure that we are saying no to things that we think are going to be damaging to that, and trying to encourage the things that we think are going to help. And my job is to tell the story of what Askell needs to tell the story of, if you see what I mean, on behalf of those 19,000 people.
And you're in an amazing position in terms of understanding what the pain points are of leaders across the country, and then also some of the solutions that are being developed. So, you know, to summarise, what are the main priorities of leaders currently?
So the number one, without a doubt, would be funding. And the trouble is, it just sounds very boring, that, and people kind of glaze over. But the reality, I had a meal with a good friend of mine who's a deputy head in a school of 1,700. They've done another restructure this year. They're stripping out all of their pastoral roles. It's not that they're replacing them. They're just getting rid of the idea of heads of year and heads of house. They can't afford to do it. And they've reduced, in a school of 1,700, their leadership team down to 5 people on a split site, where they'll have 2 on one site, 3 on the other. And he's saying, I just worry what this is going to do to behaviour, how we're going to be able to pick up those kids we've been able to pick up in the past and coax them to behave better, to keep in touch with their parents. I mean, I think the funding thing is devastating, and we have to find a way of convincing the government that this is not us just whinging. This is going to have a huge effect on young people. So that's the number one. Number two is recruitment retention. It's a bit of a disaster zone. It's going to get worse because there's 500,000 more children on their way into the system over the next 5 years. And the third area, I guess, is the whole social mobility thing, which is the one that ought to be the most exciting. How do you help children from the most disadvantaged backgrounds to have the kind of opportunities that our system has tended to deliver to the children from the advantaged backgrounds?
I mean, that's very interesting, because they were talking here, this event very much in its vision is about getting education up to the same kind of status as, you know, other ministerial departments. So people really wanting to go into that education minister role. So, I mean, from the point of budgets as well, and allocating budget, you know, from the government into our education systems,
What can we ask more of, and you know, how is that conversation going to evolve, do you think?
Well, it seems to me, you know, in the UK, we're something like the sixth largest economy in the world. We know that the world is changing very rapidly, and people have always said that. But I mean, the trend towards artificial intelligence, robots, and so on, is going to be the fourth industrial revolution, I think. And education is going to be the key to that, because if we're going to outpace robots, it's by helping young people to be more human. It's building their empathy, their creativity, all the stuff that the robots won't be able to do. I think that's an extraordinary and exciting opportunity. But what you need for that are more people choosing to come into teaching, and then frankly staying in teaching, because we lose a third of teachers after 5 years, we lose a half of teachers after 10 years. We've got the youngest workforce in the country, which means the kind of people you would want teaching your own children, because they've taught and retaught and really deepened their skills, are the people who are fleeing the profession. So the government needs to understand, A, there's a kind of moral imperative to it, but that won't happen unless we have A, less tinkering with the system, which creates workload, but B, the funding to make sure that we can pay those teachers properly and run our schools properly.
And what's the role of technology in that? Because obviously around the time of January, Damon Hines came out and sort of said, you know, technology has the potential to reduce workload, which may then, you know, encourage some of those teachers to stay within the role. Then you've got the Education Endowment saying that actually a lot of this is snake oil. So I suppose I was thinking specifically around, as an example, and people are talking about flexible working. Could we use technology to help flexible working within schools? But then on the flip side of that, you know, as you said, we've got a lack of teachers, so will that actually just exacerbate the problem of the lack of resource in schools currently? What's kind of...
So this is exactly the discussion we should be having back home, because what you tend to get is people who either polarise the debate, or they latch onto kind of gimmickry, and so there's a certain bit of kit which is going to transform the world. And the reality is it's not like that. And I think Damien Hines said something to me when I first met him, and he said, am I right in thinking that education is the only area where adding technology has added to workload rather than reduced it? I think it's a really important point. And I think what we should be saying, given that globally there aren't going to be enough teachers globally, that appears to be the trajectory. Now, it might be that if you are learning maths, that there is some routine learning that goes on there, which actually a maths teacher really doesn't need to be doing and marking for you, because computers will do that. They'll monitor what the particular kind of granular areas that you are struggling with and set you a question related to it. And I think that is an extraordinary opportunity. So we ought to be looking at how could we transform children's learning so that teacher skills are then deployed better. Now, for teachers, flexible working, as soon as you mention flexible working, people think, oh, we're talking about part-time working. And so what I've been testing out at conferences and so on, and getting a mixed reception, is what if you actually built technology into a teacher's way of working with someone else? So let's say you're doing GCSE history, and let's say you're the veteran teacher and I'm the new kid on the block who's just started. What if we split that class so that they're being co-taught by you and me? So you're teaching Monday to Wednesday, I'm teaching Thursday and Friday. And that instead of having a succession of email exchanges through the weekend, that basically we have a platform which allows us to have shared planning, shared mark book. We can have insights into how those students are doing. We can see exactly what's going on. Bits of, you know, you might film bits of your lessons or something. So you're building training and development in there. You're taking the person who's the veteran and actually coaching the person who's new. Now, technology makes that easier to do. And that would seem to me an incredible way of actually keeping people in the profession. And of course, people listening to this will say, oh, well, parents don't like split classes, students don't like it, the timetabler doesn't like it. Actually, parents probably would prefer to have a fresh-faced new teacher being mentored by the veteran that they trust in front of their child rather than a supply teacher, which is what we're on a trajectory for at the moment. So I think there's huge potential in terms of technology, but we have to stop talking about it in terms of the kind of gimmickry that we've had, I think.
And you had your conference last week. Could you give us some of the highlights of what was discussed there? And
some of what we discussed there was this, actually. We talked about, could we frame a bigger picture? And I'd written in the Times Educational beforehand saying this is not going to be a Punch and Judy conference. We are most definitely not going to just play that kind of government opposition role of government announces and we say it's terrible. Instead, can we demonstrate that we're going to work with government? And so you had Damien Hines, Secretary of State, doing 20 minutes on workload. You had Amanda Spielman doing 20 minutes on workload. You had me doing 20 minutes on workload. And then the symbolism was that we sat on stage and we talked about how we make this happen. And although it wasn't, you know, the best demonstration of interviewing skills in the world from me, perhaps. I do think that what people saw there was that we are determined, the three of us who've got the potential to try and nudge the system to do the right things. We're trying to do that constructively, and I think that opens the way for us to be able to get to these bigger questions that we're talking about now, provided the funding is there for it.
And you have your own podcast as well.
Yes, I do.
So can you tell us a little bit about that and how that came to come to into life?
Yes, as people will be bored with hearing, the career I really wanted was to be a radio DJ, specifically Noel Edmonds, breakfast show host in the 70s. And when that didn't happen, I've always retained an interest in radio and stuff, and I've always played around with audio, and it's so easy to do that now. And so it occurred to me when I got elected to this a year ago that I get to meet lots of people. I go to conferences, I get to meetings with our members, and I see ministers and other people who hold high office in different quangos and so on. And I just will then get the phone out, record them, stitch it together. And so once a month you'll have potpourri of people, some of whom are making decisions at the highest level. Some people are making decisions in their school. Some people are commentators. I don't know that everybody loves it. For me, it's an interesting record of the education system as it is now, but it also just gives you a chance to listen to the authentic voice of people you may have seen in newspaper reports, and you're actually then listening to what they say in answer to questions from, you know, humble Jeff Barton.
That's very cool. And is that on iTunes?
So it is on iTunes, actually. Yeah, Askell Podcast, Askell Leadership Podcast is on the Askell website. It's on SoundCloud.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, I have to invite you. I'm doing a podcast festival in the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in September, and we're going to have a live podcasting stage. So if you wanted join that.
I just love podcasts. I think, and when podcasts started, I thought, what's the point of this? This will never catch on. And yet, I've got a bank of podcasts, and I walk into work every day, and I just listen to podcasts. I think they are extraordinary.
And what are some of your favourite podcasts out there?
I listen to a lot of political stuff. So I listen to The Guardian, which does a weekly political thing. Andrew Neil, there's a weekly review of Prime Minister's Questions. I like all that. I love a lot of the American podcasts. So This American Life, for example, would be one, where they play around with audio in a way that we don't over here. And they are very, very... I mean, it's kind of... Some people find some of the tricks they do kind of cheesy. I love their ability to tell stories.
They're very
sound.
Well produced, aren't they? Oh. And I think some of those shows have sort of six producers, which
they do.
You and I need those on our podcast shows.
Yeah. So I listen to a whole kind of range of different things. I think it just reminds us of the importance of the human voice telling human stories.
We've had on the podcast before, for example, episodes thinking about things like data from senior leaders' point of view. So what's useful and that kind of thing. In terms of tech and, you know, not making it just fad or gimmicky, have you seen any good examples of leadership in terms of either using tech to kind of make things more efficient or enable change within a school?
Yeah.
In a way that has impact for the learners and for the staff.
A couple of things. If we do it from the learner's point of view, we have got a kind of partner organisation run by just a brilliant woman called Priya Lakhani. I don't know if you know Priya. And she runs a company called Century Tech. And what they do is they use technology to teach children things. And you can choose very specifically bits of the syllabus across a whole range of subjects. And what it's doing all the time is it's using individual data about how is this child doing, and it's comparing it with big data about how are thousands of children doing, to A, tell the teacher these appear to be the blocks for young people, that might be what you need to spend more time on, and then give a more granular level of feedback to the child. And I just think there is something in that, going back to our previous conversation about how technology could transform the workload of teachers. It will also transform the quality of feedback. So I think that's interesting. And then Duncan Baldwin, who's our deputy director, is a real kind of technology fan. And what he's saying is if we were starting from scratch with the accountability system, instead of it being other people measuring us, what would we measure and how would we measure it? And he's started to put together a network of school leaders and asking them for the kind of feedback which will allow us to perhaps drill into what are patterns of absence on a Thursday afternoon, for example. Why is that? What do we know about teenagers' behaviour and so on? Things that actually could help to inform us in terms of how we teach, how we organise our schools. Now, I don't know if that's a particular platform, but what it is doing is saying that big data is probably the next stage in helping us to make decisions about how we develop the system. So those would be two examples.
So I have a picture of you. You're walking through your fields. I see you take lots of photographs. You're listening to your podcast. So how do you kind of relax outside of your current role? What are you personally interested in?
I read a lot. I've always read a lot. voraciously. So if you mentioned a book which I haven't read, I would be buying it and reading it. That's not competitive. It's just that there's so much there to read.
On the podcast, we have a book club. So books that are recommended by guests, and we have them all listed out. So do you have any that have you go back to? So if you've read so many books, are there any that you would share with
our
listeners?
There's books which I refer to a lot. Quotes. So for example, on this subject we're talking about, I think that Mary Aitken's book, The Cyber Effect, in which she just talks about what she describes as this extraordinary social experiment of children not being brought up by their parents in the same way because we're kind of allowing the internet to do it. And there's a lot of quite dark messages from her there. She's a clinical psychologist. I refer to that a lot, partly because I think it's easy to overstate all of that. But whether she is or if she isn't, we need to, as people looking after young people, be thinking about it. So I've got the whole range. The 100-Year Life is a book which I think is just fascinating.
So I'm always recommending that one.
Yeah, I love that.
Linda Gratton.
And then the Rise of the Robots. So I'm reading stuff which is about those. I read fiction, the new Julian Barnes novel, the title of which I forget, but it's a breathtaking novel. I mean, just fantastic. So I read a whole range of different things. And I think that, I quote Harry Truman, who says that not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. And I do think there is something about engaging with ideas. And it might be you could do that through YouTube and other things, but definitely just engaging with ideas, not to steal them, but to think, right, how might that help to inform the work we're doing in our school or in our college?
And how do you prefer a physical book or a Kindle?
So I buy physical books, and it infuriates my wife because I like hardback books as well, and I can afford to buy them. They're priority for me. So I will, if I see a new book reviewed in the paper, I will get it delivered or preferably go to a bookshop and buy it because I just like. In fact, I was talking to Tim Oates, who is the architect of the National Curriculum, and he was talking about some research that suggested that reading from a screen is different psychologically from reading from a book. And I said, can you send me the examples of that? And he sent me three articles about it, and he makes a compelling case for that. And I now realise that my reading of a physical book does give me an ability to remember those things, to annotate the books, to be able to find very quickly what it was I saw there, and also to build a relationship with the book. And, that notion that a book reads us like we're reading a book. I just love all of that relationship with books.
Mine always end up kind of slightly sort of enlarged after falling in the bath or... Yeah.
Same here. Absolutely the same here.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, we did an episode on textbooks versus technology, and I think Tim Oates may have even been on that panel. It was recorded at the Battle of Ideas a couple of years ago. Well, if people want to find out a little bit more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to connect with you as well?
So I'm on Twitter, Real Jeff Barton. I chose that because there was a Jeff Barton. He's a professor of biology, actually, at Cambridge, I think. Nice guy, same age as me. So Real Jeff Barton, or... have a look at our Askell website. We've got a new one which will come later in the year, but you'll get a flavour of the work we do in the day job.
And just finally, very quick question, what's the next 6 months look like for Askell as well? What are your big priorities?
I think the whole kind of shaping of the agenda so that we can build school leaders to be more confident. This sounds terribly patronising, but I think we have lost our confidence in the English system particularly, more than, say, Scotland. And that's because we've allowed Ofsted and accountability to spook us too much. We really don't need to. The 90% of schools are good or outstanding. Why do we spend so much time talking about it? So I think part of it is finding examples and demonstrating where leaders have taken decisions absolutely in the interest of their school and their community rather than because of performance measures. And that's a far better legacy for each of us to have, that we did what was right for those, rather than, I wrote a good school development plan or whatever it might be. So I think that part of what we want to do is to give a real sense of what leaders can do. I think we want to explore how technology is going to help that. I think we want to set the debate going in terms of flexible working, because we need to have those teachers we're losing staying in the system. And I hope what people will see is a constructive but robust, ongoing, polite discussion about the important mission we've got to help young people across the world to be able to get ready to take their place as global citizens.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's episode. For those still listening in, you may be interested to know that the UNESCO Annual International EdTech Conference, titled Transforming Education Conference for Humanity, or in brackets TECH, will be held on November the 15th to the 17th in Andhra Pradesh, India, in partnership with the government of Andhra Pradesh. The event is welcoming proposals with final submissions being accepted now. And if you're feeling the itch to be a co-founder of an edtech startup with one eye on HR and marketing, get in touch as a listener is on the lookout and coming up blank with the usual channels. That's all from the Secret Squirrel News. Thanks for listening in, and we look forward to hearing from you via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram soon. Bye-bye.